This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. This week, I couldn't get a lyrics of a song out of my head, so typically when that happens, I keep hearing the same lyrics over and over and singing them out loud to myself, and I ask, okay, why? I'm like, why is this happening? And typically it ends up as a epigraph in an essay or a quote or something like that. So this is a song by Bruce Cockburn. He wrote a while ago called Call Me Rose, which he said that he woke up from a dream and just had the song ready to go. And it's very amusing, yet very profound. It starts off, my name was Richard Nixon, only now I'm a girl. You wouldn't know it, but I used to be the king of the world. Compared to last time, I look like I've hit the skids, living in the project with my two little kids. It's not what I would have chose. Now you have to call me Rose. So it's quite an amusing and yet very profound. I think it's clearly shows a sort of karmic rebound of past lives and such like. But the part that got me to want to do this episode is the next stanza. Now you have to call me Rose. I was boss of bosses the last time around. I live by cunning and ambition unbound. The suckers said they'd stand behind me, right or wrong, as if they thought that hubris was the mark of the strong. I was an arrogant man, but now I've got it in hand. It's not what I would have chose. Now you have to call me Rose. So, for the hubris and the arrogant, that made me think of the empire and the powers that war, and the powers that build the weapons and market the weapons, and the suckers, they said, the suckers that stand me behind me, right or wrong. That gets me to talk about how many people in the U.S. will, come election time, connect the dots, or will they wave the flag for their favorite candidate, or will they connect the dots that their government, with their own tax money, if they paid taxes, gave billions of dollars to fund the state of Israel and their military, whatever you want to call it, bombardment, ethnic cleansing, genocidal attacks on 40-50% women, civilians, hospitals, bakeries. I mean, it's just disgusting and absurd and sad. But along with the emotional aspect, I want to look at other aspects because I think that helps also put it in the bigger picture with not meaning in any way to diminish the emotional. But one of my recent shows was kind of a rant, so now I get to talk about it with a little more of thinking about it. And what got me to think about it was the initial horror, which it is. Yet, it is a continuation of the same damn thing, which is the global war of terror. Now, you remember that after the 9/11 attacks, that was dubbed the global war on terror, as if terror was the enemy, as if you could conquer an abstract feeling. And I think it was Gore Vidal who said, as if you could conquer dandruff or something like that. But anyway, so after a while, I realized that the horrors that it was perpetrating around the world, rather than take the side of the U.S. and say it's a global war on terror to root out the enemy, I realized they were participating in the same thing that they were pointing the finger at. So I dubbed it the global war of terror, the GWAFT, because GWAT was the other acronym, but I dubbed it GWAFT, the global war of terror. Now, this is the part where the numbers don't do justice but to the lives, but I want to make a point. And that is that in 9/11, there was like I don't have the exact statistics this week. My computer is getting repaired while I'm recording this, but it was around 3,000 or so people killed by the 9/11 attacks. Meanwhile, the global war on terror that then ensued from that, billions, if not trillions of dollars, and one statistic says worldwide 4.5 million people killed. Now that is the global war of terror. Now a similar thing is happening with Israel, because again, the numbers don't do it justice, and I mean no offense, but reported maybe 1,200 people killed from the supposed Hamas, if it was only Hamas, I don't know, the Hamas attack on Israel, and already, after a few weeks or a month, more than a month now, Israel, the reports are about 11,000 people. So the numbers, you know, if you're keeping score, which again, I don't like to use these terms, but I'm trying to make a point, is that the reaction is just off the charts, and the reaction speaks of something else. It speaks of something far more sinister, which is the global war of terror, and whether it's for resources or whether it's based on, you know, biblical extremism or religious fanaticism, whatever the reasons, the other, whatever the reasons, the end result is billions of dollars spent, more weapons built, and more people not only killed, but also the lifelong traumas and injuries and the disrespect of the land and the air and the water, that wherever the battle is happening, which is not much talked about in the news. Now, let's go back a little bit in history for some more awful statistics. The native peoples of this land, Turtle Island, the empire, the colonial settlers, and then into the U.S. and the empire, 95 to 97.5% were wiped out, which only began to rebound, almost gone. The numbers were minimal, and they rebounded in around, I think it was the early 1900s. So whether you label this, some of the labels I wrote down, capitalism, colonialism, theofascism, global corporate empire, economic social warfare, whatever it is, these are the things that then went on. Okay, here's another statistic from Global Research out of Canada. Since World War II, the U.S. has killed 40 million people. So what happened to World War II was the war to end all wars. But now, since then, 40 million people. And I bring these up because, you know, that famous quote, "Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it." So I wanted to bring the bigger context, which is that as horrible as the Israel attacks, and they are drawing, you know, many people's emotions and many people's responses to how horrid it is, which it is. But if you look at, okay, what happened in Ukraine, also horrors. If you look at what happened more, a little farther back, but still ongoing, is the war in Yemen, which I wrote a little bit about it, some articles about it, but it was barely in the news, barely at all in the news. I forget the numbers again, but the many children starved and emaciated. There were some photos of emaciated children. Now, that was not in the news. That was not every day pounded in our faces in the news. Which leads me to say that the news, another aspect of the global war of terror, is the persuasiveness of the corporate news, because it becomes like, and I've written or spoken about this before, it's like a monotheism. It becomes one God headline, one story that takes over, and it takes over the consciousness. And again, not to diminish that it doesn't deserve attention, and that there isn't trauma and something serious to address, but that story takes over. And many people, that's gone from, say, climate change, then it went to COVID, then it went to Ukraine, and now it's the Middle East. So that's the continuing monotheistic corporate news consciousness. Now, also, how this plays out in media, in small-time media land and big-time media land, is that I've seen almost every website I check, some days, is virtually every article, every journalist, every report, whether it's, you know, facts or opinions or solutions, it is about the Middle East. Now, I can't point the finger at this because I myself have written an article about it, and I've done, there's another podcast about it. So I too feel personally motivated because of my Jewish heritage, but that I can't say, well, that gives me more of a right to say, and I'm not putting down that so many people are writing about it. I'm just saying that I find it an interesting phenomenon that there is this somewhat mono focus where something happens in the world and the news hones in on it and puts it out there, and then it's like everybody responds to the same thing. Now, the other question that raises is what is left out of the picture? And that is where probably one of the key things I have learned over the years from listening to native friends and native speakers And writers is that what is left out of the picture is the indigenous or original people's perspective. Because it made me think, okay, from the indigenous perspective, or from the even the farmer's perspective, what if you had all those articles about the Middle East every day for a month and a half now, all those articles about how to care for your local habitat, how to care for Mother Earth, how to care for the water in your region, how to care for this and that. Now, there are, of course, there are websites about that, but they are far and few between compared to this massive amount of what I'll dub the corporate monotheism, and not even just the corporate, but then you have the reaction and the responses from whatever labels you want to put them, lefties, liberals, eccentrics, centrics. I call myself eccentric because eccentric is outside the center, but I prefer to stay centered, so I call myself eccentric. Centrics, mystics, writers, artists, poets, people just voicing their opinion, whomever it is. So it's not just the corporate monotheism, it's how we all, it's how a lot of us play into that focus. So I think, one of the ways to get around some of this is to expand the parameters and to bring in other voices and to bring in wider perspectives. Even if I'm doing an article about a certain topic, I make a point to mention, the habitats or the earth or the local water or something of that nature, because that's important, because we're all here riding with the same earth. So I wanted to just to wrap up on a what I hoped would come out of this is in the subtitle, "Let the de-scarification begin." Meaning that I think that the terror, and I noticed this after, around the war of the global quote global war on terror propaganda started, that terror, just that energy, that vibe is being pumped out into the universe or into the world through the media and through the reporting. Now, sometimes that's good because people see the horror and it touches them and they respond. But in general, I'm just saying that the general vibe is that there is terror out there, and you better be damn best be careful. So I think to some degree, yes, obviously one has to be careful in whatever situation, especially say being in the Middle East or being a journalist or whatever. But I think in general, my general wish in communicating this is that we as a people, as a collective, do not buy into the fear tactics, because that's what also gets promoted through the corporate monotheistic media, is that the fear is meant to incapacitate us or make us react and go in a different direction than we might normally do if we took a deep breath, if we took our time, if we thought about what the right answer would be or the right decision, if we slept on it, if we went outside and consulted with the trees in the yard and said, "Oh, I have a big decision to make. What's your opinion?" Or looked for the guidance from a dream, or asked a friend or an elder, or asked a 5-year-old, or any number of ways one can get an answer that is other than reacting out of fear. So I think we all deal with fear in our personal ways, but as a collective, each of us that does overcome our fears helps to the de-scarification process, because I think ultimately that is one of the hooks that the empire and the system of domination has on people, is that fear. It's underneath a lot of stuff that they play the fear card. And in my recent book, I even wrote that I don't think that money is the root of all evil. I think that fear is the root of so-called evil, because it is the fear of the lack of having or the lack of being cared for by the natural law that makes people want to be accumulate money and be greedy. If you were not afraid of being taken care of, rather trusted that you would be, why would you spend all day, all night trying to, save up and make so much money? I don't think, that doesn't make sense to me. So that a few tips, and obviously could go on and on about de-scarification. And one more mention, as far as some of the religiosity and and the biblical quotings in the Middle East and such like, there are passages are actually in the biblical passages about like promoting fear. Like, you know, I'm trying to find a quote. If I can't find it, amazing how much I rely on searching a PDF or something like that. But it is like, oh Lord, we have put fear into thine enemy or something like that. So fear is nothing new. Fear is a tactic going back at least a couple of thousand years. And the fear is still being promulgated, whether it's religious or corporate media or whatever. So I think we need to identify, it helps to identify the fear energies and the fear mongers, and then to, in our own ways and in talking with friends and family and talking with the natural world even, how do I be not scared of you? I mean, I think sometimes I just stand outside at night and it's quiet and I enjoy it, but then because I'm not used to doing that much, and because of the way the locale in the world is, it's like there's a moment of like, oh my God, it's just me out here in nature, and it's a moment of scare, and I get through it. But I think we each in our own ways have to face whatever it is, personal fears and collective fears, because ultimately tipping the scale of the global, the guaft, I think is about not buying into the vibe and not buying into the fear. And I want to wrap up this episode with a few paragraphs from a book that all books published in 2011. It's called Children of the Sun, Prosatry Unplugged by Teocasin Ghost Horse of the Lakota Nation. And I'm not going to try to interpret it because I don't want to, you know, put that out there, like what it might mean or not. I'll just let it speak for itself. But it's very, I find it very thought-provoking and putting some of what's going on in the bigger picture. He writes, I finished this reawakening with the oldest documented prophecies in humankind history. The Hopi prophecy, translated quite simply, states that there will be, quote, a war of retaliation against terrorism. A war to save the innocent and to punish the guilty. But who is innocent and who is guilty? End quote. Mother Earth is in her purification dance. The dancers of life are lined up according to age. The youngest are the beginning of the movement from the center according to the songs. The songs are the cycle of life and the earth. And as we learn them, the wonder of it all grows with them. Would any open-minded thinking person permit our way of life to die in the midst of civilization? Mother Earth will decide our course, and the possibility of you surviving depends on whether you continue to think you are immune to her. We humans are defined by extraordinary events in nature and earth. Be courageous, and thanks for listening. Be well.